This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Some years ago, Central Florida was not necessarily seen as a culinary destination, but that's changed in the last 10 years. For more on what makes the culinary scene here unique and the latest food trends, I invited a panel of chefs and food writers to join the show. Well, Emily Allen is a chef and culinary educator and Food Network star. Emily, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me on your last show.
We're also joined by Hari Pulapaka, CEO and founder at the Global Cooking School and Associate Professor of Mathematics at Stetson University. Hari, nice to have you back again.
Great to be here, Matthew, and there's no anyone can do all of that well enough, so thanks for that intro.
And Ricky Lee is the publisher of Tasty Chomps food and restaurant blog. Ricky, thanks as well.
Thank you, Matt.
And Faiz Kara, restaurant critic at the Orlando Weekly. Thank you, too.
Thank you, Matt. Great to be here.
Ricky, I want to start with you. We talked to you some years ago, 2015, in fact, as part of a series focused on Little Vietnam in Orlando. What have you seen in that particular part of the kind of culinary landscape of Orlando since then? Have you really seen the Vietnamese and South Asian food scene change significantly since 2015?
Wow, yeah, that's a great question, Matt. Especially this year, with all the new developments coming to the Mills 50 area, you kind of see the second, third generation of the Vietnamese immigrants, you know, the children of the old market owners and the restaurant owners taking over the space and kind of transforming Mills 50. I think it all started with Tori Tori by Chef Sonny Nguyen over there with the beautiful facade that they have and architecture. And there's going to be more coming from the folks behind Maki Hibachi. The owner, Mike Nguyen, is opening up a kind of like a speakeasy style like bar there, and so that's taken over what used to be, you know, little markets and maybe a bun me shop and things like that. So it's definitely transforming. I think Mills 50 is still very much the heart of you know, the Asian kind of immigrant kind of food experience, but obviously there's little pockets everywhere. West Orlando, in the Chinatown Plaza near Pine Hills, there's lots of different, you know, Chinese cuisines going on there, and East Orlando now too. It's almost like they're branching out into different pockets that aren't being served.
Hari, you've gone from a restaurateur to more of a chef educator role, but just kind of thinking back to your time running a restaurant kitchen, what did sort of that experience teach you about the, I guess, the tastes of the diners in Central Florida?
So, Matthew, I think, you know, a colleague of mine at Stetson pointed out to me like a year ago, you know, he actually asked me, so, Hari, what's it like now that you're not a chef anymore? So, funny you mentioned that my role as a chef has changed from being an active kitchen-bound chef to one of being an educator. I think, if anything, I have more time to pay attention to what people are kind of interested in food and things like that. And from what I've seen in the past few years, certainly the proliferation of quote-unquote plant-based cuisine is one of focus. I can't yet say that they're very successful, but they're certainly trying. And beyond that, I think there's been a, you know, thanks to the last 2.5 years or so, there's been a de-emphasis on fussy cuisine, I guess really upscale tasting menus and things like that, except for a few options. Most of the restaurants are trying to find the middle of, you know, accessible food that tastes good with lots of acid and global influences and mid-price ranged and things like that. So I don't want to call them fast casual necessarily, but I do feel like because of a number of reasons, and we'll get into that, I'm sure, kitchens just aren't able to sustain that kind of fussy, I say fussy in a good way, fussy in terms of paying attention to everything kind of cuisine. So from what I can tell, I feel like the diversity is increasing in some ways, but there's also, I think, a uniformity that's happening. Food is kind of coming together in a broader highway, if that makes sense.
Emily, let me bring you into this conversation. You know, we're still in a pandemic, technically, but we've really spent the last 2 years in the worst of it. What impact has that had on, you know, the way you work as a chef and just kind of on the food scene in general, do you think? Obviously, it had an immediate impact when restaurants had to shut down for a time. Do you see some lasting kind of impacts from that, though?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the segments that we fail to really talk about is the catering and event space. I feel like that was one of the most hard hit scenes in our industry. And though in our industry, we're very resilient, strong, creative humans who rallied together. So earlier today, I mean, we could go on about how the pandemic like has destroyed us. And I think what we should be talking about is kind of the phoenixes that rose from the ashes, right? And
well, there were some restaurants that opened up right in the middle of it, right?
Absolutely. And like Ricky Lee and I were just talking about before we came on air, there was a really good example in College Park, Tornatore's. We enjoyed the fact that there was a small bakery, Sugar Buzz, and they would not have made it through the pandemic without the collaborative efforts of Tornatore's bringing them in and having them do the desserts for the restaurant and then opening almost a food hall, if you will. And it's like a market that they created to make fresh pastas and desserts and more Italian-focused grab-and-go options. So I think those stories are what we should really be talking about. And also just the resilience of, like, for instance, that catering segment, how they started supplying grab-and-go or ready-to-eat meals that the public could just purchase instead of just catering events and what have you, what they did before.
Fires, Cara, you've led the charge on advocating for Orlando's identity as sort of a bona fide food destination with a wealth of interesting dining options outside of the chain restaurants that people might think about if they think of the tourism scene. Do you still feel like you have the need to defend Orlando's culinary reputation?
Not anymore, but before we get into that, Matthew, you know, the four of us, we wanted to present you with a gift of a durian.
Durian for all.
Durian for all.
I mean, I don't know if the public realizes the big things that are coming in Matthew's life after.
Well, the durian is the first thing because like the durian, Matthew, you're a little bit prickly. You're, I don't know, somewhat bulbous, I suppose. And, you know, I've been wanting to tell you this for a long time, but Matthew...
I'm banned on mass transit in many countries.
Yes. Yeah. Take a shower.
Yeah, I should note to our listeners, too, I put the foot down and said the durian can't come into the studio. It's sitting in the newsroom at a...
We're crushed.
We are crushed.
On Brandon Burns' desk.
Because I thought Matthew was running for president. Nobody told me. I know I'm blonde and... the last one to hear about this.
He's got my vote.
Durian for all. I thought that was your campaign slogan.
Yeah, well, and for people who may not know, Fires and I actually had a durian experience a few years ago. It was a frozen durian, though, so it's probably a little less pungent than the ripe, unfrozen variety of the fruit.
But correct.
I mean, it's an interesting specimen, I guess, but people go crazy for durian. Like, it's a kind of a cult fruit, and
it's true. And you were talking about identity, Orlando's identity, right. And food identity. And personally, as far as trends are concerned, because I think that's the motif of the show. I for one want to start a durian trend. You know, we're talking about, you know, there's all these tasting only concepts that are opening up, but you know, I think a lot of these chefs need to incorporate the durian into their tasting menus. We want to see durian and cocktails. We want
to see durian or mocktails
and tacos.
Low alcohol trends. I mean, it fits into every trend. It pairs well with spice, and spice is hitting trends.
I think you should be Matthew's vice presidential.
I am.
Running
and
mate.
Our campaign chief Hari would actually like
to
chime
in. Sure. If I may add some hashtags to this.
Yes,
movement.
Please. Yes, please.
So hashtag sober curious and hashtag durian curious.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm in. Matthew
for president.
Yep. Durian for all.
Hari, let me ask you about durian then. What's your experience been of durian?
I'm a big fan and well-versed with jackfruit. And some might even refer to me as a jack of many trades.
I mean, it's a versatile fruit, right? You can cook the seeds as a vegetable. It's got everything you could ask for. Really.
And interesting you mention the seeds because I think the jackfruit seed is the most prized part of the jackfruit when roasted, you know, properly and salted properly and seasoned properly. It was a treat growing up. Durian, I don't have any experience with.
Really? You've never tried durian?
I've never tried durian, but I would be willing to curate a durian crudo first course.
We have one on the premises. Yes. We have one on the premises. We have a knife.
Beep, beep,
and
beep,
I think...
beep, beep, coming in live. We need a taste of durian for Hari. Beep, 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 beep.
we'll attend to that afterwards. If you're just joining me, I'm talking with Emily Allen, Hari Pula Parker, Ricky Lee, and Fires Cara about Central Florida's food trends. So, Ricky, going back to the food neighborhoods of Central Florida, and you were talking a little bit about how, you know, we have Mills 50 in Orlando, which is a hub for Vietnamese and Asian cuisine. Many of the restaurants and supermarkets, of course, that we explored as part of our series with WMFE back in 2015 came about because of particular waves of migration to Orlando. Are you seeing some other cultures kind of set their mark in Central Florida now and sort of bringing with them their unique food culture?
You know, a couple of years ago, there's a big Brazilian food trend, like Brazilian pizza places, you know, and not just the steakhouses, you know, but you know, those two. But yeah, I've definitely seen more and more little Brazilian spots picking up. Let's see, what else?
Yeah, 14 Bis Pizzeria, which is this aviation-themed pizzeria. It's a very cool interior. But the pizzas, Brazilian pizzas, I have to say, they have a sweet crust, and for those who aren't used to eating Brazilian pizzas, that's a new flavor dimension that enters your pizza domain when you bite into one.
Right.
There's that Miss Potato shop that's also owned by Brazilian.
There's a lot of Brazilian.
Yeah.
Not just pizza.
I think vegan vegetarian is really kind of hitting our landscape hard, and not necessarily a cultural influence that just kind of like melds in with the different crossroads. I will say this, speaking of trends and cultural trends, now I would be remiss to talk about whenever there is war and conflict in the world, we will see an uptick and resurgence of the cuisines from those countries in conflict. So I predict that we're going to see borscht and different
borscht everywhere. Borscht everywhere.
Borscht everywhere. But I believe we're going to have some Ukrainian and Russian dishes that are going to surface in fundraisers, and then it's going to catch on.
What would you say then, aside from the sort of vegan vegetarian, are you seeing some other things kind of pop up in the culinary landscape that you wouldn't have expected?
Well, not that I wouldn't expect. I believe because the influence of COVID has made us very conscious about what we consume. Like, we want to go out and have, or well, maybe I should say how we consume. We want to go out and have an experience. And then when we go out, we want something special. So then that what is something a little unique that we can't just create at home, as we're all now experts, you know, as Hari mentioned, or order in. So I think we're going to, we're looking for experiences. Mm-hmm. We're looking for the cresses of the world. Come back, my friend. And then I'm not shocked by it, but I feel like the segment above fast food, you know, that
what fast is it? Casual.
Fast casual, if you will. Yeah, that is such a growing market. And this was a very easy market to capitalize on. You know, it was easy to grab and go. It was easy to go. It's affordable. You know, you can still get something a little different that you're going to make at home. And so, like, we have a lot of barbecues. We have a lot of noodle shops and, you know,
we're going to see
tacos.
A whole lot more chicken places, too. I mean, there's going to be a proliferation of chicken joints opening up
fried
this year.
Chicken.
Well, they're taking advantage of the Nashville hot chicken trend.
Yeah,
and
is
so
that what you're seeing with the likes of like Chicken Guy and other?
Yeah, but we'll
places.
See more. We'll see newer ones. We'll see Chicken Cone. You know, we'll see variations of that theme. You know, taking fried chicken and, you know, people putting their own spin on it.
Yeah.
There's already a chicken strip district in Winter Park with all the different...
That's right.
That's
the
true.
Chicken strip district.
Now, I've noticed that restaurateurs, younger chefs, and you know, are becoming more business savvy in that I'm seeing many of them attempt to and even succeed in opening multiple concepts and multiple locations. And that's not something that I was seeing as much of, perhaps, past 15 years. But I'm seeing more and more that restaurants are opening up new concepts and multiple concepts because they understand that to really make a living, you kind of need more revenue. And having just one location with 50 seats doesn't quite cut it. So that's a business savvy that I think is good. And I'm noticing, I wouldn't call it a trend, but I'm noticing that.
I've talked to each of you at various times over the last decade on this show on Intersection. And one thing that stands out is that Orlando in that time, I think, really seems to be coming into its own as a food city and a culinary destination. So I want to ask each of you, what defines the food scene, if at all, in Orlando and Central Florida? Fires, what do you think?
Our diversity. Mm-hmm. I think our scene is getting, at least over the past decade, increasingly diverse, and that's something I'm particularly proud of as as an Orlando resident, just to see the wealth of options. Mm-hmm. We talked about all the different neighborhoods. You know, Mills 50, of course, is arguably the most diverse neighborhood in our city. But then, like Ricky was mentioning earlier, East Orlando out by UCF, there's a lot of different varieties of restaurants there, from Taiwanese to Szechuan to halal fare. You know, it runs the gamut. So that's the one thing that I'm most proud of, and one that I really want to promote when I write.
Yeah, absolutely.
Emily, what do you think?
No, I'll second that. And then I will also say, not only is our food scene evolving, so is our beverage scene. Mm-hmm. And from alcohol to crafted mocktails to coffee and teas, I think we're really excelling in all areas.
Just on the note of drinks too, Hari mentioned the idea of something sober curious before, which is, I mean, that's kind of an evolving scene, right? The mocktails, the people who want to sort of take a break from alcohol for a bit, if it's a month or maybe longer than that.
It is, and shameless plug, I'm part of a company that does cold brew teas, and that's the essential concept behind that line, is to promote it for itself, but also in cocktails. And so Sober Curious is something I picked up in the marketing language of that company. Mm-hmm. But it's you know, I've gone through my own stages of backing off and sometimes not having it all. And as a restaurateur, as a full-time chef and educator, I've beaten myself up quite a bit on those lines for the past decade. Mm-hmm. And recent doctor's visits have told me that perhaps that was not a good idea. And so now I'm trying with some success in backing off and not always celebrating with an alcoholic beverage, but sometimes just celebrating. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, physical health is paramount. I mean, without physical health, I mean, nothing else really matters, right? Mm-hmm. We know this in a number of ways.
Ricky, what do you think defines the food scene in Orlando and Central Florida?
Yeah, you know, like we talk about culture, right? You know, and tradition, but that is always changing, transforming, mixing when we interact with others. And so that really, I think that's kind of Orlando in a nutshell. 50 years ago, you know, Disney World celebrates 50 years this past year or so, and that would have been totally different. But over the years, immigrants from all over the world have made Orlando their home, and not just the world, but, you know, America itself. And actually right now, there's a huge migration coming in from all over the U.S. as well. So I think it'll continue to transform. I think people have found a way to start up their food businesses, even on Instagram. There's that Brad's Underground Pizza place that now is inside a ghost kitchen, and, you know, what else is new? So, yeah, I feel like that's what Orlando really is, kind of, where it's always on the move.
I mean, you look at the scene at the turn of the millennium, right? It was, I mean, our scene before, when people were asked to describe Orlando's food scene, they would just immediately say, oh, it's the chain capital of the world. Mm. But I don't think we can say that anymore.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining me. I've been speaking with Fires Cara, restaurant critic at the Orlando Weekly. Fires, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew, and all the best in your future durian-related endeavors.
Ricky Lee, publisher of Tasty Chomps food and restaurant blog. Ricky, thank you so much, too.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much for all the years of stories and all you've done here. And look forward to following you at your next step.
Hari Pulaparkar is the CEO and founder at the Global Cooking School and Associate Professor of Mathematics at Stetson University. Hari, always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Matthew. It's always a pleasure. And hopefully, even when you move to where you're going, we'll get a chance to be in a kitchen one day and you'll be shooting over my shoulder something that I'm making and then pretend to enjoy it after the fact.
We also spoke with Emily Allen, chef and culinary educator and Food Network star. Thanks as well.
Thank you for having me, Matt.